And we're live.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the very first episode of the Beyond Retro podcast. And I'm Tyler Baker, one of your co-hosts. And with me and for the long haul ahead is Joe Amato.
How's it going, Tyler? All set for a brand new podcast covering things from the 80s and some stuff beyond, but the main focus will definitely be 80s stuff. Man, this is, God, there's so many things to talk about that we needed this podcast badly. Definitely needed it horribly.
Yeah, we've been discussing, aside from the fact we do a weekly He-Man podcast, doing an amalgam podcast that covers, you know, and we want to emphasize beyond too, because you know, we'll touch on stuff that's outside of the 80s as well, but you know, the 80s itself. And yes, we know there's a plethora of podcasts that have done 80s stuff or is dedicated to this, but we're really going to grind home, you know, the graphic details of certain films and TV shows and cartoons and a variety of things that have gone throughout the decade and into the 90s and
everything. Video games.
You know, yeah. I mean, it's there's so much to cover, and we're going to do a wide variety of stuff each week. You know, I mean, today we're going to do a movie discussion. You know, next week we'll plan on, you know, touching on kick-ass game shows that us as kids of the 80s and early 90s would have been. Just to kind of give you an idea, I mean, we're going to be as 80s as the Don Johnson music video Heartbeat. We're going to be as 90s. Or early 90s is the TV show Video Power, you know, just kind of emphasize just how in depth we want to get with this. We're not just going to be touching on cliches and talking, oh yeah, it was great. It's like, no, we're going to go into detailed discussions about stuff. That's what we really want to hammer home. What we do on the He-Man podcast, we're going to bring the same thing with this podcast.
Yeah, because we were obviously wanting to talk about, you know, sure, there's mainstream movies of the 80s and 90s that, yes, of course, we're going to talk about.
But no one might talk about those. They definitely got to get on the Ghostbusters discussion.
Oh, yeah, we're going to be hitting those also. But then we're going to be hitting things that just sometimes you don't hear anybody talk about. But the second we bring it up, I can guarantee you're going to remember it. You'll remember, like, I remember that TV show. Oh, I remember that movie or whatever it is. Like I said, we just want to cover so many different things because, like I said, there's just the amount of stuff that exists from the 80s. I mean, just look how things are always revisited. Look how they're always doing, you know, like a reboot, a remake of this movie, this TV show, you know, bringing back this video game, bringing back this cartoon. I mean, the 80s seemed like it was one of the hot, I still consider it one of the hottest times of pop culture. I mean, anything that it seems like is always revisited, it seems like is always brought back from the 80s. Almost any movies you could think about, like, you know, that have been coming out in the past couple years, you know, they've rebooted. It, you know, and the same thing with cartoons, bringing back some of the old good toys. It's just, I think it's because, you know, after the 80s, I'm not saying things were terrible in the 90s and beyond. No, I'm not saying that. But it seemed like just maybe, I don't feel like there was as much heart and some of the stuff, whether it was a movie.
It was like the 80s transition into the early 90s for a brief period. For, you know, you kind of feel like, you know, from 90 to 91, 92, maybe even 93, you had some quality entertainment. And, you know, I mean, obviously the video game craze got bigger and bigger from the from the 80s and into the early 90s as well. And of course, you know, what we have today. But, you know, the most memorable cartoons, the most memorable horror icons. Of course, you have a few before the 80s. You know, I'm sure we'll touch on those as well. That's why we say sure. Beyond retro. You know, there's just there's so much material from, you know, horror movies to action movies. You know, we're both big fans of 80s action movies, as me and Joe have discussed in our spare time. You know, so we definitely intend to talk a lot about. You know, we've already said ahead of time, we plan to do not just retrospects on certain actors in their films, but we'll actually devote time to a specific film. Like we plan on doing, you know, a Steven Seagal and a Van Damme retrospect, but then we can break it down and do a retrospect on just Kickboxer and just Marked for Death.
Yeah, you can spin it so many different ways. There's so many different ways to spin it. And like you said, I mean, it's not just the movies. I mean, we talk about some of the great TV shows from 80s into 90s. And, you know, you got
Married with Children. I'm hoping, you know, if I have to send Joe a complete seasons myself somehow, I am hell-bent on doing a Miami Vice episode as well. And hopefully I can get Joe to watch two or three episodes of Miami Vice just enough to show to him that it is the definitive cop drama and that nothing on CBS and NBC and ABC holds a candle to what that glorious show was back from 84 to 1990.
And that's what you're going to find out between us, is it's things you might have seen in our He-Man podcast also. And if you never watched it, well, I mean, you're just going to see what it's like. Meaning we have two different ways that sometimes we might have experienced stuff through rentals, or maybe just our age, to where I was into something a little more, but he was into something a little more, and, you know, another aspect. I mean, there's things that I've seen that he hasn't seen and vice versa. Like, you know, Miami Vice, I watched some of it when I was growing up, but I'll admit I didn't really get too much into it. I didn't watch all the episodes, not saying it was terrible.
Let me elaborate on that very thought, because I watched it with my dad as a kid, but I didn't go back to rediscover the show till I got out of high school. And me and my brother decided at the same time that let's give Miami Vice a shot. We'd go to the video store and rent The Prodigal Son, which was the pilot on VHS, and also rent not Prodigal Son, The Brother's Keeper, which was the pilot, and then rent Prodigal Son, which was the season two opener, on VHS, and then it was just a craze that just started and has never stopped since.
See, these are things you're going to find out about Tyler.
Yeah, and we want people to, you know, get involved with it and be part of the podcast as well, just like with the He-Man podcast.
Sure. I mean, it'll take time. It's going to build its momentum. But, yeah, you're going to find that out with Tyler. A lot of it through the rental is sometimes where he really started experiencing a lot of this stuff and got a great passion of it. And, like, there's things that I've talked with him about, and I was shocked he's never seen. Like, he never watched the old cartoon Dungeons and Dragons. And, oh, my God, that's one that I absolutely love. And then he said he's never seen a Police Academy movie. I was like, huh?
I had some of the action figures, but I've never seen one of the films in its entirety.
Yeah, because I think you said, didn't you say one of your first experiences of the series was part six out of all movies?
I think my dad ran into part six one time, and I remember like, hey, yeah, it's the cartoon show, Police Academy, and I couldn't even remember if we even watched the movie or not. I just remember the cover. And I remember seeing the covers for all these films in the various video stores. You know, they were kind of hard to miss.
And, you know, that's something even to touch on, because I'm sure we'll talk about someday, is all the covers of the 80s, you know, movies that you rent. I love the painted feel a lot of them had. Like, you know, the National Lampoon's Vacation movies and, like you said, Police Academy's, a lot of different ones. I just always loved the box art of those. Nowadays, it seems like some of them are just kind of flat. Like, oh, let's take a picture of the actor or just put the name of the film. And it's like, oh, wow, that's exciting. You know, I don't feel like there's that love.
There were so many, you know, and we could do a big discussion on just VHS covers alone. I mean, as a kid, I always think of Crocodile Dundee on VHS, because a lot of VHS tapes had New York City in the cover art. And those were very eye-opening to me, because I always saw New York as this massive character, so to speak. So you would see New York used in so many VHS covers, and Crocodile Dundee, for whatever reason, really stuck out to me with like this massive character peeking through the bush, and there's New York City right below him. I mean, it has an epic King Kong feel to it, and a lot of VHS tapes had that.
They did. I mean, I liked it. Like, the Toxic Avenger sucked me in. I remember going to the video store and always seeing the Toxic Avenger box arts. And I love just the look of that itself. And there was, Beastmaster. Those movies. It's like, oh, my gosh.
Oh, man. So Beastmaster had the big VHS box from MGM. You know, because that was something, too, that you had, like, the smaller VHS. And Beastmaster had the real big box. Same thing with, like, Clash of the Titans and Invasion USA. A lot of VHS had this big box with beautiful paintings and two pictures on the back sometimes. Sometimes you get three, but a lot of times it was just two pictures, maybe even one picture. And you were like, just, oh, man, the box art had to sell you that, plus whatever advertising photos were on the back, too, showing the various action and monsters or whatever was on the back. Oh, man, I'm so excited we're doing this podcast, man.
That's what I mean. I mean, I'll be honest, like with a lot of the stuff nowadays, I guess maybe just for me, I don't feel like I'm drawn into the cover. Of course, there's the movies I want. Don't get me wrong.
Besides to Photoshop the hell out of DVD and Blu-ray release covers, and movie posters are they're cheap. They're nothing inspiring. There's nothing that looks make you. It could be a movie you never even heard of, and you happen to be walking in the movie theater, and you say, "What the hell is that?" Of course, with the internet and stuff like that, it's kind of hard to know not know what's coming out. But there's nothing eye catching. You know, the movie posters of the 80s and early 90s, well, even some into the 90s, were just, they could be simple, and yet they would, like, you know, Jurassic Park. Or even what's behind me here, Jaws, as simple as it gets. A simple painting right there. It has been parodied and copied for decades now and will still continue to. But that tells a story right there. And, you know, movie posters today are they're pissant. They're lazy. I mean, I probably can't even name five good ones in the last 5 years that I've, you know, even for good movies I like. You know, I just...
Yeah, because there's great movies. It just sometimes seems like there's not great posters at all.
You know, they're not, they don't make you want to go on eBay or some internet website and buy it and put it on your wall. You know, they just lack a lot of charm and originality. And I guess that was the fortunate thing of growing up during a certain time where, you know, you'd walk to the movie theater and see a teaser poster or the new poster for this movie that maybe you've seen an advertisement on TV for, and that poster, it just makes you just want, you know, hope to God that movie's coming out soon, even though it says coming soon. You know, is it June 21st already?
Yeah, you'd get excited. I mean, you got excited for it. And, you know, like, I remember, like, the original Nightmare on Elm Street, the original poster for that, you know, it was so bizarre how Freddy looked. Like, it's not how Freddy appeared in the movie, but there's a way he drew him and above Nancy, and just so creepy.
I never understood that as a kid, because I only saw the VHS cover of that. And the sequels had a bigger effect on me than the first Nightmare did, because I didn't quite... It didn't, like, I guess because Freddy, and like, on part two on the VHS, he's, like, tearing through the cover and kind of peering out. And then in part three, of course, is my favorite, where he's sitting there holding the Dream Warriors. And to look at that, you're thinking, man, all these tough teenagers are going to go battle Freddy. And there's this poor girl in a white dress or a white nightgown and a punker girl, and they're all going to fight Freddy. He's holding them. You know, you just think, oh, man, this is scary as hell, man.
Uh-huh. I mean, but that first one, the first Elm Street one, you're right. It was just strange to look at. It was
very strange.
It was crazy. Yeah, it was just strange.
The VHS cover doesn't show Freddy's, like, the skull motif. You just see the claw. And then, eventually I saw that Freddy's face is prominent on there, but just in that kind of weird, decrepit skull motif.
Yeah, a very strange poster. But, yeah, like I said, so there's going to be tons of things. I mean, there'll be weird things of merchandise. We're going to talk about, like, old board games. I mean, anything you can think of we're going to do. But the one we wanted to start off with...
Let me ask you real quick, before we get going here. Since you're talking about merch, do you remember the Dinosaurs Attack trading card set?
Nope. See? Something else I don't know. Well, go ahead, tell me about it.
Oh, no, I was just... people who listen to this, if they haven't remembered this 80s trading card set that was marketed to kids of dinosaurs that somehow reemerge on Earth and start eating adults and children and pets, and these painted trading cards of dinosaurs attacking, crushing people, sliding, cutting people in
half. Do you have that set?
Yes, I do. I do have that set.
And I wish you would have it around you. I would say show us some of these cards.
Well, I'd like to see it. With me right now, but if you do a Google search, Dinosaurs Attack Trading Cards by Topps. And it was, I remember only having a few of those as a kid, and it's to look back and think, this was more, I mean, it's a badass set, but to think, and as a kid, it wasn't traumatizing at all. It was just like, that's what you expected, just what you would see dinosaurs do in old movies. They would be eating people. And this is, I mean, you're seeing them tear, I mean, there's one of a, I forgot what the name of the dinosaur is, but it's eating a, you know, a baby. It's pulling up from a baby carriage and it's got blood over its mouth. I'm like, this dinosaur just ate an infant.
I'm going to have to see it. You know, that is the thing.
It's pretty messed up, man.
They had so
many. Ballsy of the 80s.
Yeah, but I mean, the 80s just had so many crazy pieces of merchandise. And whether it was stuff like that was completely different, or even things based off the movies, it just seemed like it was so exciting. Anytime a movie came out and you really got into it, just to get whatever crazy piece of merchandise. Like, I remember, you know, I was really young when E.T. came out. But... sure as crap, boy, when they had a little wind-up E.T. figure where he'd walk, they had this crazy little, like, E.T., which I have over here. This thing, I still have it from my childhood.
I got that for my fourth Christmas.
Don't you love it? I love this thing. I mean, I love, like I said, you pop it up, this comes out. I'm not going to push a button, but there's a button, and if I push it, ET will come flying out of that thing. And God, I mean, I loved every piece. And you know, when you're talking about trading cards, let me see. I might have something right by me. Something a little different. Hold on a second. Okay, these cards are ones that I remember I posted, and like a lot of people were like, I never heard of these because they were so used to Garbage Pail Kids. But do you remember the Weird Ball cards?
Never heard of those.
You never? Oh my God! I mean, these things. Like I said, there's so many. Like I said, there's just so many different crazy characters on them, and they even made little mini figures of these things. But there was it was like a dollar store, whatever you want to say, in my area. I remember when I was a kid, and I used to love going in there. They'd have for a buck, you'd get a good amount in a certain pack, and you'd get a couple. But these, I remember wanting to complete. There's a picture. You're only going to see part of it, but this is a diaper spot, if you will, of one of the characters.
Make a puzzle or something?
Yes, it makes a big puzzle, and I think the character's name is Humunga Saki, maybe. I think that might be what his name is. But that's what I mean. This kind of merchandise is just stuff that, again, you were loaded with having this Weird Balls, and of course Mad Balls, and then Garbage Pail Kids, and just some of the most gross, disgusting, strangest, craziest things. And I see that they're trying to do some things like that now, which is cool. And, of course, they're even bringing back half of the stuff we're talking about. Not the Weird Ball stuff, but you do see a lot of, Mad Balls being revisited balls, yeah. And things. And so, I mean, it's always cool seeing, what comes back. But the 80s it was a goldmine of stuff from merchandise to films to movies. And the movie that we're going to talk about today, I wish I could remember how the conversation went with me and Tyler. But it was almost one of the ways we first kind of on Facebook connected. I think it was at the same time we were talking about Masters of the Universe, somehow a reference of a movie, Sidekicks, came up. And Tyler said, wait a second, did you just say Sidekicks? I said, yeah. And he's like, I've honestly never met anybody else. He said, besides my dad, he's like, I've never met anybody else that I could say Sidekicks or talk to Sidekicks about. And so it was crazy. It's a movie that I liked, he liked. I don't know how many of you seen it, but you go ahead and start off with it, Tyler, because like I said, it's a great 80s movie. Great. Was it 80s? I mean, what year did that come out?
This is early 90s. So we're
early 90s. Okay.
The Beyond part today.
Yeah, the Beyond. Okay, I knew it was okay.
But then again, too, we're talking about one of the biggest 80s action heroes, too, in Chuck Norris. So it ties in 80s as well. I saw this on VHS. I remember seeing the advertisements for it on TV when it came out in theaters. And it was just one of those times where we went to the theater to see stuff, but for whatever reason, it was a movie I definitely wanted to see, but we never got around to seeing it. And of course, rented it from King Video in my area, and thought it was a fantastic movie. The first time I saw it, my dad really got into it because he thought Joe Piscopo was funny as hell in the movie, and he is. I think sometime earlier this year, like last winter or something like that, I think after me and Joe, when me and Joe talked about that film, this was maybe 2 years ago or something like that, like on Skype or something like that. And it's on YouTube to watch for free. You don't have to pay for anything. Yeah. Not available on DVD, unfortunately. So you
it's
can
not
watch
on it. DVD? It really is? It's not on
nope.
DVD?
Nope, huh. It is not. It has not been given an American release. Maybe it's released overseas, possibly, but it has not been given an American release. But the movie still holds up, and even more so now as an adult to watch it. There's a lot of jokes in the movie that as a kid kind of go over my head, and because of the parody. Like, there's certain things I thought were funny as a kid, but I enjoy it so much more as an adult. And yes, let's get it out in the open, it is a Karate Kid knockoff, but that's not to say that it's a bad thing.
You know, what's funny is when I watched it, I never felt like I was looking at a Karate Kid knockoff. And, and the reason I mix up the years sometimes when I was doing that in my head with that is, I don't know if you ever remember the TV series Sidekicks that was on. And that was, I think, around the late 80s. They had a TV series called Sidekicks. And I think it had, the little kid, Ernie Reyes Jr. Yeah, Ernie Reyes Jr. He was in it. And I loved watching him doing his martial arts. So I sometimes screw the years up. But no, as for this one, the movie with Jonathan Brandis and Chuck Norris. No, I never felt like it was a Karate Kid knockoff. See, what I liked about it, and what separated, at least in my opinion, what he does is something I did and still do. He's a daydreamer. He's always fantasizing and daydreaming about being off in these adventures. with his buddy Chuck Norris. And, you know, who, when they were a kid, didn't do some daydreaming like that? It's like I immediately...
I'm 33 years old and I still do it. I mean, I'm... Most time, though, I never thought about teaming up. Well, sometimes I did, but I always want, always put fantasies about actually being Arnold or Stallone or Van Damme or Chuck or He-Man or Lion-O or one of the Ninja Turtles. I never, most time it was always never teaming up with him. It was like, no, I want to do what they're doing. But it, it's very relatable because Jonathan's character, you know, is like Ralph Macchio's character. And Karate Kid is, you know, a bit of a weakling, is easy prey for the local bullies in school, and has got his heart set on a particular girl, and you know, wants to be, you know, larger than life like his hero Chuck Norris. And the movie does a great job of doing a lot of, fun action sequences that are clearly parodies of. You know, variety, some of Chuck's movies, and some are just kind of their own idea, from the torture sequence with the gym teacher Richard Mall, and the Western sequence where Joe Piscopo's playing the tough guy gunslinger in the bar that's getting smacked around by Jonathan Brandis. But it's
real quick, you said, you know, when you're talking about, you know, like a Karate Kid knockoff. Now, see, I didn't do any type of research. Now, is this, did they ever say this was supposed to be? Did they say, oh, it is a Karate Kid knockoff?
No. Okay. Just as a kid, it was a formula that I recognized, that there's a kid that's being picked on in school. He's being trained by, of course, Mako, you know, is clearly not a ripoff of Pat Morita's Mr. Miyagi. There are similarities, but Mako... It's such a fantastic character in this film, and an actor as well. I mean, you see him Conan the Barbarian, Conan the Destroyer. He plays Splinter in the 2006 or 7 version of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles film. He's got a very distinguished voice, and he does a great job of playing this kind of very serious and deadly but goofball kind of grandfather character to Jonathan Brandis's Barry in the film. And helps him, gain confidence and work through his asthma and strengthening his lungs and doing a variety of different martial arts techniques before he's kind of challenged to participate in this tournament, which, as a kid, I wanted to see him take on Randy Cellini, much like Daniel takes on Johnny in the Cobra Kai.
You know, it's funny. First, I want to say two things. One, about that whole thing about, you know, training him and you know, having him come out, like, overcome his asthma. I have a friend who, that is exactly what happened to him when he was young. He had a horrible asthma. He started taking Taekwondo. The teacher was almost how that movie was saying, you can beat this, you'll overcome it. Sure enough, he actually overcame his asthma. He did a lot of training, strengthened up his lungs. So it shows the power of, you know, things that can actually help. You know, some people want to say it might be hokey in the movies, but it can work. Now, when you're talking about, you know, you want to see a fight between him and Cellini. Now, what's funny is, in the Karate Kid movies, you have Daniel's son, which, in a way, I used to always see my sister. She loves Ralph Macchio. And when the Karate Kid movies, everyone came out, you know, she's like always, you know, like, oh, God, I love him. And I used to pick on Ralph Macchio, like the way he walked. And I was like, don't you realize he's the bully? He's the one causing all the trouble. He's picking on somebody. He's instigating. I was like, if he didn't do the stuff, there'd be no fights. I said, and of course.
Are you just trying to copy what some guy did on YouTube like a couple years ago, saying that Johnny was really the victim?
No, this is something I used to do with my sister. I did. I always said he's causing the trouble. He instigated all the time. I was like, he's a troublemaker, especially in part two, which we'll talk about Karate Kid 2 one day. I was like, you deserve every bit of that.
We'll cover all three of the Karate Kid films, because I'm a defender of part three, even though it is flawed and problematic. Yeah, so
we're going to hit them all. We're going to hit them all. But no, like I said, I really did pick, you know, of course, I like Daniel Stone, but as for... You know, like I said, I'd make fun of the way he'd walk. It drove my sister nuts. And, of course, I would say he was the bully, drove her nuts. But what's different is, you know, comparing Karate Kid, where Daniel's son did seem like he was kind of getting into the situation that sometimes, well, shoot, and here we go, and here comes a fight. And then, okay, we're going to have a tournament, and they're going to fight at the tournament. And it was, you know, Mr. Miyagi, of course, when they went there, and he was basically like, you know, we'll do it here. So, then he had to set up and train, go to that fight. But what you have here in Sidekicks, there was never anything like this. All he was wanting to do was to train so he could, like, hopefully get stronger, stand up for himself. Like you said, he overcomes his asthma. But it was never to go to a tournament. But isn't it funny? Cellini's the one that challenges, Jonathan Brandis challenges him to the fight. So that's what's the different kind of like factors. In Karate Kid, you have a way where it's challenging, you know, Mr. Miyagi's, you know, mentioning to the guy, let's go and we'll go to the tournament. But in this...
No, there is completely different there because Kreese is demanding a fight right now. He's like, too much advantage, your dojo. He's like, all right, the name, the place, the tournament.
Yeah, that's what I meant. I mean, eventually, yeah, that's what I mean. Mr. Miyagi says tournament. So then, of course,
Fanboy in me's coming out there.
Like I said, that's when Miyagi said, okay, tournament. And it's okay. So he's able to train, and boom, they have this epic fight. But for Sidekicks, it was like never meant. That's not what this point was. It wasn't like he was training all and learning all this stuff so he could go fight Cellini somewhere. It was just to strengthen himself up. And then Cellini challenges him. And of course, then, you know, they have a fight right there in the gym, which I liked. I liked that he was taking on Cellini. And he was like, at some points, besting him and pretty much being even. I like that. But then, of course, like you said, when they go to this whole thing, it's a whole different type of thing. You have him doing like his weapons routine. You have all the members of, you know, his gang, if you will, everybody doing something. One doing the kata forms, one breaking the bricks. And of course, the epic thing that Chuck Norris is there. And Chuck Norris gets right, which leads to, the hilarity with, like you said.
It is an exciting moment because when you're watching this movie, and Jonathan Brandis does a good job of being a sympathetic character, someone that you can relate to, because he is, as much as he's sitting around watching VHS tapes and wanting to be like Chuck Norris and team up with him, we sympathize that because we a lot of us have been there. I completely sympathize with it because I didn't have asthma, but I certainly found him.
You were the bully. You were the bully that picked on everybody, right?
Oh yeah. That was like, clearly me in school.
I could see that. No, go ahead.
But it does a great job of building this. I mean, obviously, when you see the trailers and stuff like that, you kind of get the – I mean, you see in the trailers that Chuck does meet Barry in the movie. But when it does happen, they do a great job of building up this moment. And then when Jonathan just happens to turn and see Chuck sitting right next to him as he steps, you're excited for Barry in the movie. You think this is amazing for him.
His dream became a reality, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just a lot of – and Chuck – I feel like Chuck gets a lot of crap for a lot of his movies. And Chuck, you know, he does a good job in a lot of his movies. And this is one of them where
What do you mean he gets – I've never heard that. What do people say?
I always kind of feel like, you know – especially, you know, within the last 10 years, like Chuck Norris has become a punchline for so much stuff. Like people like to, you know, make fun of his – tough guy persona. And
well, you know what's funny? I don't think that's like them mocking him. It's like people are – Chuck, to me, has become such an even beyond cult-like character
but
they make those references.
Joking. Like people look – when people think of Bruce Lee, and Bruce Lee is immortalized and will be forever, but they look at him as the real deal. I mean, and Chuck was the real deal as well, regardless of his age.
I don't think they see him as a joke. I really don't. I don't think people see
him. I just felt because there's been so many jokes and people think, or maybe they'll say, oh man, you know, I don't step on toes, I'll step on next. I'm like, you know, no. Chuck says it in Invasion USA because he's going to kick your ass. Not to be, you know, he's so tough. He uses a rattlesnake as a condom. You know,
I think it's a serious thing.
I don't want Chuck Norris associated with one-liners. So people can, you know, buy their shirt at Walmart that says, you know, Chuck Norris does this. And, you know,
I think of it different. I do. I think
he thinks it because I let my action heroes taken seriously.
I think they do, though. Really. I think they take him seriously. It's like he's became so cold and so badass.
Well, I think there's character. People that don't take him seriously. They see him as a punchline as opposed to someone that...
Well, that's not me. I've never seen that.
Well, when I'm seeing the jokes and stuff like that, I'm taking him like, you know, you people shut the hell up, you know. But that's me. I grew up on a very strict, healthy diet of 80s action movies. So I'm, you know, I looked up to these guys on film for many, many years and still do. So it's like when people like to make fun of Arnold and Stallone for their Stallone's, you know, the way he talks, the way Arnold talks. I'm like, I'm ready to start, you know, strangling necks.
Well, I do feel bad because when they do it with Stallone, it's like, you know, he was born, you know, with
perfect
that
fact. Everybody thinks it's cute and funny to make fun of it because, oh, man, I'm so witty and clever for making fun of Stallone's birth defect. Anyway. Yeah.
But let's the fight. Like I said, that fight at the end between Chuck Norris and Piscopo,
we probably ought to emphasize just how good Joe Piscopo is in this movie.
Awesome.
Why this fight scene is so good. It's because
Weird is he's not like hated. That's what I love about Piscopo is he's so cocky, he's so obnoxious, but it's hilarious.
Of John Kreese and Karate Kid. He clearly it's almost like he saw Karate Kid. All right, now I'm gonna amp it up to 150.
Like Kreese, you know, in Karate Kid, you hated that guy. I mean, that guy was like, my guy was like, what a horrible teacher. But Piscopo in this movie, it's like, he's so obnoxious and hilarious. You can't hate him, but you do want to see him fight. And, you know, of course, he loves to show off his, you know, body was fighting Chuck Norris and these faces he makes.
We have commentary for Sidekicks. I swear we do.
If you guys never seen it out there, if you've never seen Sidekicks, like I said, it's free on YouTube. Watch it. And when you see that fight at the end and these faces he makes, and, you know, like when he's getting hit, he's like, I wasn't ready. You know,
I go with you. Oh, man. And when they're building up to the fight, you're like, when he's taking out opponents, you know, he's like, yeah. And then he's down at the below the ring watching Chuck fight. He's making these faces like
scoffing. Yeah. Yeah,
man, so funny. And then he's in every one of those, you know, fantasies that Barry has, because he's the bad guy in pretty much most of the scenarios, where he's a Vietnamese general, or he's the slick back goon of this gang that's poisoning candy.
Yeah, that crazy gang. Yeah.
I mean, it's just he's chewing up the scenery, and you just have so much fun watching him. It's such an underrated movie, and I'm glad Joe suggested this, because this is what we want to do. We want to emphasize that this is a forgotten film that's never. I saw it in some internet search. This was ranked as like one of the top 10 worst movies. I mean, like saying it was so bad it didn't get a DVD release. And I just wanted to find the guy who came up with this list. You know, it's just like, okay, clearly you're just some douchebag who just thinks you're cute and funny.
That was really on a list. You said it was so bad that's why it didn't get a DVD.
Yeah, but it was probably just some idiot sitting behind a computer who thinks, oh, look, people can see what I have to say about movies here, and makes up this list. And I'm like,
I'm still dumbfounded. I still can't believe this hasn't been on DVD. I still can't believe it ain't on DVD. It doesn't make sense to me. I don't understand.
There's a lot of crap that's been put on DVD that you could find for a dollar at the Dollar General Market or the Big Lots. And Sidekicks, I have never seen, you know, as far as I know, not even one of those sets that have like three or four movies in it, like the Chuck Norris, you know, 90s collection. You have Hitman, Sidekicks, Top Dog, you know, or something like that. But it's unfortunately not available. And I'm sure maybe if you dig, I'm sure you could probably find some sort of bootleg of it on DVD, or if you know how to burn, you know, movies from the internet onto, you know, a DVD. I'm sure that's a way you could do it as well.
Yeah, I guess that's about it. I mean, but
I'm just saying it's possible. You know, not that I'm saying I encourage illegal activity, but I'm just saying there is a way to do it.
Yeah, I mean, well, you learn something new every day. Like I said, I never knew it wasn't on DVD. Can't believe that, but I'm sure eventually it should pop up. You think? I mean, heck, you could have some of Jonathan Brandis's movies. Not that I'm saying there's tons of them out there, but for some of the things he's been in, maybe they could do it. But I don't know then what is considered, you know, like when you have one company doing it, another company doing it.
Like Top Dog, where Chuck Norris teams up with a dog. And I saw that as a kid. That movie sucked back then. I'm like, that's on DVD. Why isn't Sidekicks on DVD? Sidekicks had an excellent cast of, I mean, you had Bo Bridges, Jeff Bridges' brother. You have Mako, Julian Nixon from Rambo Part 2. You got Joe Piscopo, you know, being one of the goofiest great villains of 90s action movies. And Richard Mull from Bull from Night Court, and the voice of Two-Face in the Batman animated series. And Jonathan Brandis and Winnie Cooper from The Wonder Years.
Yeah.
That's a solid cast and has not been given a DVD release. I mean,
which she becomes his fantasy to rescue.
Oh, yeah. I was so happy as a kid, because I'm like, he's always saving the teacher. Why isn't he saving Winnie Cooper? And then he's like, what happened to Noreen? Hey, this is my dream. I'm like, there we go, man. Getting the kiss and everything. That was my kind of fantasy as a kid. It's like, not only do I want to be a tough guy, but as a kid, I'm like, I got to save the girl and get a kiss too, man.
Yeah, so I like that too. No, it was good because, right, like I said, it was always the teacher he was fantasizing about. Finally fantasizing about her. Because
which never sense because it doesn't imply that he had a crush on his teacher in the film. You know, it's just like she cares for him, wants him to do well, but there's no implications that he's got a hot. What course?
Well,
I'd
have. Well, I think that's the thing. I think that's the thing because since she's always showing the compassion, only one that's always showing to care for him, that's why he has her as the only one being the fantasy. He never thinks of any of the other girls because they don't think of him, acknowledge him, or give him the time of the day.
But in the film, that like when he's being laughed at for kind of daydreaming openly, saying, you know, that's what psychics are for, Chuck, and everyone's laughing. She's like, you guys leave him alone. It's like, it almost feels like there's a connection already that may not be the best, but there's some sort of implication that these two are somewhat buddies, you know, because he finally works up the courage to ask her out, yeah. And she says, no. But you're like, what the hell, man?
Hey, because remember then, because that Cellini was putting, you know, ideas in his head that she pities you, and then that's what he thought then.
Or doesn't like, she pities you. I was like, what a prick.
But then it sure enough went in his head because that's when she did something, you know, said the same thing. He was like, Cellini was right, you know, so it's like, oh my God. But
I feel like that's probably the case, and then she sees him kicking his ass.
And then she likes him, yeah. Then
that, so.
That's all I liked. All of a sudden, once he became the tough guy or something, then she
was like, you can embrace that as a young boy. Like, you want to be seen as the guy who can stand up for himself, and you'll win the girl, too, because that's what girls are attracted to. At least. That's what you're led to believe as a young boy, that, you know, if you can save the day and beat the bad guy, that you'll also get the girl in the end because that's what the girls want, you know?
Yeah, it's like, what a great message. Because, yeah, basically, Cellini was right then. She did pity him. She didn't like him. But the second he became a tough guy, then all of a sudden, oh, hey, Barry. Like, oh, now you like him, huh? So, yeah, you can't like anybody unless they're a tough guy. It's like, what a horrible message to send to kids.
I don't know, but then again, too, you know, not to say that it's probably not current, but I'm sure there are some women out there that like to see that the man of their lives would be a protector, someone that you feel like you would feel safe with. And to see Jonathan Brandis, this poor kid who's dealing with asthma and constantly being mocked and picked on because he likes Chuck Norris and martial art magazines, says, you know what, the hell with this, and starts, you know, just knocking Cellini all over the gym and dishing it right back. And so much the gym teacher's like, not bad, kid. Not bad at all.
I liked when Bull finally had the respect for him to see that. So that was pretty cool. Because he was holding his own. I mean, he was getting the best of Cellini at times. So that's what I like seeing. And it had nothing to do with being at a tournament. He was just right there. He's like, it's not going to be so easy this time. It's like, oh, shoot. He's taking him on. And that was cool. That was cool to see.
And then I guess to go back to the fight that we kept building up to, because you're very anxious to finally see Chuck and Joe Piscopo go toe to toe, and
oh wow,
just to see, you know, and it just goes to show you how good Joe was in this, because he's playing a character that gets one cheap shot in, and that's it. The rest of the fight,
he gets start. Yeah, where they're gonna touch gloves, and then
he smacks him, and he goes yeah, and just oh man, it's so great because Chuck kicks his ass the entire match. And Joe's just selling and selling and selling how angry he's getting, and then does his best Bruce Lee impression when he's finally had enough.
Oh, it is great.
It almost looked like that when they were filming that Chuck is actually genuinely smiling. Not for the character, but because he probably was smiling because this was funny as hell to watch Joe Piscopo do his best Bruce Lee impression.
He did great. That's all right. You couldn't hate the guy. I mean, even when he got kicked hard in the stomach from Chuck Norrison, he was like, that face he makes.
Yeah, gosh, he's so funny. I swear, I feel like going to watch that movie as soon as we get done with this podcast, because the more we keep talking about it, it's such a damn good film that no one discusses. When people think Chuck Norris films, and rightfully so, they think the, you know, classic films of the 80s and probably early 70s as well, but Sidekicks is one of his last great films that is sorely unappreciated.
Yeah, I feel like sometimes with some of these movies, you know, Chuck Norris, and I'll even bring up another example. You might hate it, you might love it, but I'm going to give my opinion. But some of these movies like that, where it's not a serious action movie, maybe they say, oh, it's kind of comedy, oh, it's a kiddie movie, I don't like it. Like the one that I loved, but almost everybody hates, Last Action Hero, I love that movie. Because again,
I adore Last Action.
No, it's what I mean. I love it, and I love that. My God, how cool would it be if you could escape into a movie and have something like this happen? But I remember everybody who was a serious action fan of Arnold Schwarzenegger, they all said, but wait a second, this isn't real, and this is stupid, and it's silly. I'm like, well, no, it's not silly. This is great. It's a good fantasy movie. Well, it ain't like Commando. It ain't like, you know, like Predator. You know, they were just into Terminator and all that, so they put this one down. But that, to me, was one that just got a really bad backlash. You know, of course, it did terrible at the theaters.
Well, plus it came out against Jurassic Park as well. So,
well, that's, I mean, definitely something that'll kick you right in the ground.
Crushed anyway, but...
But, I mean, it's underrated. Again, no, it's not supposed to be a serious action movie, but it was.
But it's got great action scenes in it. Like, as a kid, a lot of the comedy, like, I got some of, because I was such a movie fanatic as a child anyway, I got some of the jokes. A lot of them went over my head, but it was so fun to see all these cameos and to see the Ripper and Benedict. And
the thought of them being in the real world. You know, the one that got me, of course, you know what I'm going to say, the thought of, like, if they, I was actually waiting for them to, it didn't happen, to bring Freddy Krueger into the real world. I was like, oh
yeah,
my God,
Freddy in this. Yeah, when Charles Dance is, you know, circling, you know, Gary Oldman's Dracula, and he mentions Freddy Krueger and Hannibal Lecter and King Kong, is, you know, it's, see, now we got to do Last Action Hero.
Yeah, that'll be another one sometime, yeah, because I thought that was going to happen.
Another, which I think in today's culture of movie fans, Last Action Hero is definitely a lot more appreciated.
Because they get to go back and actually watch. Yeah, I mean, a lot of people go back.
Because I feel like that it's definitely was a movie that was ahead of its time and probably was a curveball for Arnold fans, and unfortunately came out against Jurassic Park as well, I think the week before, the week after, something like that.
Because you start thinking of it. You start thinking of, my God, what if there was a character that doesn't, you know, realize now he's brought into the real world and he is a character in a movie. And, you know, he's sitting there, he meets that one kid's parent or his mother and says, I'm Arnold Braunschweiger. You know, he doesn't know the guy's name. But, you know, that's, I mean, it was kind of cool seeing him. And then, of course, you know, he wants to punch, I think, in the glass or I don't know what happened. He's like, you can't do that. You know, like, this isn't a movie. And, you know, It's something that, yeah, I think that'll be another one we'll talk about.
Yeah, we definitely, I mean, we need to do a commentary for Sidekick. We need to do a discussion on Last Action Hero and a commentary on Last Action Hero. This podcast can go on, but probably even after we're dead, me and Joe will still come back and keep doing it.
We'll still do it. No, yeah, because, like, next week's episode, you know, when Tyler was talking about, we're going to talk about a lot of the great game shows. When we're talking about game shows, we're talking about, yeah, not only Video Power, we're talking about Double Dare, we're talking about Finders Keepers, a lot of the Nick shows.
Nick Arcade, Legends of the Hidden Temple, a lot of the, of course, you know, most of these, these were all, Nick, aside from Video Power, these were all classic Nickelodeon game shows from the late 80s and into the early 90s.
Yeah, the majority is going to be the Nickelodeon ones, but yeah, Video Power, that's going to be the exception. But that's going to be a fun episode next week because you don't hear many people talking about all those great 80s into 90s video game shows for, you know, kids. I can't wait for next week's ones too.
Yeah, that's going to be a blast to discuss that. And I mean, it'll be fun to hear if people respond to, you know, I remember Nick Arcade, and of course everybody remembers Double Dare. You know, Double Dare is unanimous, you know, with children of the 80s. I kind of feel like that's one of those things that I even boy or girl, no matter what you were into, whether it's sports or movies or...
Didn't they even do Double Dare 2000 at one point? So
yeah, and I remember seeing that. I'm like, this host sucks. And I don't even think I watched a full episode because I just felt like, dude, there's nothing that compares to the charm of Mark Summers. Like, you go back and rewatch those episodes now, he'll even make jokes on the show where the audience is like, ooh, like he's, you know, making these cheap shot jokes sometimes. But he talks to the kid. Well, I'll save that for next week.
Yeah, we'll save that for next week. But Double Dare.
Glorious praise on Mark Summers for next week.
Yeah, Double Dare is definitely out of all the ones we'll be doing. Yes, it's the most iconic and memorable. Like, you know, sometimes I'd mention Video Power to people. They're like, well, wait, what's a who, what? And, you know, and then you can say Finder's Keeper, Nick Arcade. You know, I mean, there's a lot of those other ones that, yes, some people might not connect with. But Double Dare, almost everybody would remember Double Dare. Because first it was just the ones with the kids. Then you got the family. So there was so many ways to connect with that. So.
And it was one of the big introductions of, you know, of just the gross ass stuff. I mean, you can't do that in television, introduce the slime aspect for Nickelodeon, but I feel like Double Dare kind of added the extra kind of gross out factor for the kids shows.
Another show to talk about someday. You can't do that on television. That's what I mean.
Which is another, you know, it was a Canadian show, and I don't think it was a Nickelodeon show. I think Nickelodeon just imported it and played it on the channel when it was like a brand new channel, I think. But I could be wrong on that one. But it was the where slime got started. Of course, Nickelodeon is lost that whole slime aspect, like they've lost their balls too, and it's become the equivalent of the Disney Channel.
Yeah, if they want to start bringing back stuff, how we're talking about how they rebrand and bring stuff back. Yeah, bring back some of the great game shows from back then. Bring back Double Dare. Bring back Nick Arcade.
Well, I know, and I think earlier this year they did a one night only Double Dare like reunion special. I think it was just for one episode. Maybe it was to kind of test the watch to see if maybe they could, you know, bring it back. Who knows? But
they should try again. I mean, they really should.
Or they should make it a regular show, because I'd imagine kids today could still appreciate what we watched on Double Dare, answering trivia questions, having to do these crazy physical challenges, and then having to pick a giant nose to find an orange flag, otherwise you can't go to space camp.
That, and I used to hate it when they couldn't find, like I said, I love the pizza one. I was like, it's right there on the pepperoni, it's right under the pepperoni. Why are you not looking there? They're going through all the sauce and cheese. I'm like, are you just going to flip that pepperoni someday? And then sometimes they flip it right over. When they flip the pepperoni, it's right on the pepperoni, and they're looking at it. I was like, oh my God, you're screaming at the TV, but you love to. You love to scream at the TV. So, yeah, that'll be fun.
We're going to be joined by our good friend Nathan Kennedy for that episode. For next week's 80s retrospect on the children's game shows of the 80s and early 90s. So we look forward to having him on for that discussion. And, anything else to say about Sidekicks? I mean,
I think we pretty much, like, I wouldn't want to keep going and going because, for those who maybe never seen it, you know, definitely you go to YouTube, right? When you're done with this, listening to this or watching this, just type in Sidekicks on YouTube and get to experience it yourself, because there's a lot of moments we didn't touch on, but there's no way I could see anybody looking at that and honestly hating it. I mean, if they did, hey, I guess there's things you can love.
Well,
and hate,
but if you're a fan of Chuck Norris, then I kind of find it hard to believe you wouldn't like this film. I mean, if you're a fan of early 80s Chuck, late 80s Chuck, 90s or Walker Texas Ranger Chuck, I find it hard to believe you would not enjoy the charm of this film. Even, especially if you're a Karate Kid fan, you can see the parallels of the film. And plus, it's just a fun movie. It's a fun, coming of age story where you're a kid going through high school, you know, trying to avoid being picked on, you know, wants to be, you know, larger than life. It's a story that's been told a million times in various shows and movies and stuff like that. It's a relatable story. You know, Winnie Cooper's in it looking all hot and stuff, and so is Julian Nixon, and you got Mako and Bo Bridges walking around with like a hole in his sock. That's a random moment in the movie. I don't know why I pointed that one out, but
hey, well, I guess there's always some kind of moments to.
But it's Joe Piscopo is one of the most underrated movie villains of all time in that film. So it's a very, very good film, and we hope people who have not seen it or haven't seen it, you know, since the 90s, we'll give it a shot and revisit the film.
All right. Well, I'm going to give a quick recommendation of something. This is something different for me, but this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to give a recommendation of a video game that you guys should play. Whether you have a Sega Genesis or if you want to do it on an emulator or something else, you have got to play Kid Chameleon. If you've never played Kid Chameleon, my God, this game, you know, there's tons of levels. There's weird ways you can warp to a level without even knowing, but you could become, if you want to say, you can look like Jason in the game. You could be a samurai. You could be a little micro fly. There are so many different outfits or people you could become in this game. But it's a good, great side-scrolling action game from the Sega Genesis that sometimes you don't hear people talk about. But if you know, because sometimes we're going to bring up games that, yes, are iconic and some that are underrated. Since we're talking about an underrated movie and Sidekicks, I'm going to talk about an underrated game. So Kid Chameleon on Sega Genesis. If you have a Genesis, find an old copy on eBay. And if you don't, and you want to do an emulator, do an emulator. You got to find it and do yourself some service and play this game, Kid Chameleon. That's my suggestion for a game.
And tying in a recommendation, I'm going to keep it all Chuck related here, and throw out Missing in Action 2: The Beginning, which that was my first one of my earlier experiences of seeing Chuck's films was Missing in Action 2, and I still enjoy that film to this day. And it's looked upon as a very bad movie, even by the canon standards. I think that they felt that movie was not going to be very good. And if you find, you know, we'll find out that movie's supposed to be the first Missing in Action film, and they swapped it and made it the sequel. I enjoyed it, and still do. I can understand why it might be kind of slow at times, but it was a very impressionable film to me. as a kid and watching Chuck Norris. So that's another Chuck recommendation there.
All right, great one. Well, how did you want to wrap it up? Because this is different. We're the same in Fans of Power, so go ahead.
I'll end it with a movie quote as well. So you send off, and I'll finish it off with a movie quote.
Okay, well, this time all I could say is there's two places to go. Go to popculturenetwork.com, and on Facebook, go to Beyond Retro. It's our new Facebook page, so it's go to Beyond Retro on Facebook. So until next time, live like it's the 80s.
You know, I've always wanted to see how good you really are. You're only going to see it once, Stone.
And you'll hear that if you're going to watch what we said. You'll hear that quote. So, see you guys next week.
See you next week.